It's time.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right into the slot. Pettersson scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
For Locked On Canucks.
Now Pettersson out on the right wing side. Saucer pass left circle. Besser shoots and scores!
It was good that Brock Lesnar got a goal.
You got a journalism for that?
The kids continue to get it done.
With Justin Morissette.
He's a weird dude, yeah. It's good to have weird dudes.
That's right, your favorite weird dude back with you again. It is Locked On Canucks. I am Justin Morissette. This is your Locked On Canucks for Friday, July 31st, just 2 days out from the Canucks opening round, the qualifying play-in series against the Minnesota Wild. And to talk about that today, to preview the series, I am joined by Tony Abbott of Locked On Wild. It's a long chat, so let's get right to it. Tony, thanks for talking to me today.
Hey, Justin. Thanks for having me on.
No problem, man. I don't know what the vibe has been over the last couple weeks, or I guess last couple months, in the Minnesota area as fans look ahead to this series. But has there been a lot of reminiscing about 2003 in your parts? Because that has certainly been a hot topic in Vancouver over the last little while, though I guess there's probably more hard feelings up here given that we came out on the losing end of that series.
Some, right? Because, like, if you're looking at great successes in Minnesota Wild history, it's signing Zach Parise and Ryan Suter that one day, and also that series, and that's you know, just about it. That was about Minnesota's only trip to the conference finals. I know there was a big piece on The Athletic that Michael Russo wrote about the 2003 series. I haven't heard that much about it. At least most of the Wild fans that I interact with, like it's starting to feel like the Twitter, like Minnesota Wild Twitter is getting younger. Like there's still like some old people like me, or like people who are 30 who are like by default the old people on Wild Twitter. So like I ended up talking a little bit about Vancouver this week on Locked On Wild with someone else who has a Wild podcast, there were two people, and one of them was like, yeah, like I'm like 18. Like, so it's like, oh, you would have been like three when this happened or something. Like that.
Not even one. Like might not have even turned one at that point, because we were talking about a series that was 17 years ago. And that is insane, Tony. I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around that, making me feel insanely old. But it is funny because I feel like if you went back probably 15 years or so around the time of that series and in the years after it, I got the impression that Minnesota hockey fans probably would have considered Vancouver one of, if not, their top rivals, because this was a team that was playing in the Northwest Division. They were facing each other between six and eight times a year, depending on the season. So it would have made a ton of sense for both fan bases to consider this a rivalry. But I also think, at the time anyways, that it came across very one-sided, that Vancouver, thought of themselves as, a rhinoceros, and the Wild were just like flies batting around their head, basically. You don't concern yourself with something on that level, necessarily. But I do feel like that's hubris on the part of Vancouver fans, because as we approach this series 17 years later, Tony, I have to feel like I actually do kind of hate Minnesota.
Well, like when the Flies do beat you, right? You get really mad about that. Like when you're like having a nice night out outside, like on I don't know if you guys have mosquitoes out in Vancouver, but in Minnesota we certainly do. And when you're out there and mosquitoes ruin your night, it's just like, I hate you so much. And I feel like there should have been at least a little bit of that dynamic after 2003, but I do think that it stayed pretty hot in Vancouver, even after like Todd Bertuzzi left to become a criminal and such. Because I remember very distinctly the season where Matias Ulhan snapped Mikko Koivu's leg in half. That was a real big moment. There was a lot of hate for Roberto Luongo before he like rebranded himself as like a beloved old guy. And Minnesota fans would take a lot of delight in Minnesota inexplicably owning him whenever he would come to the XL Energy Center. So like there's a lot of like Vancouver memories like stuck in the collective fan base of the Minnesota Wild. Unless of course you were like one.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the Matias Olin, Mikko Koivu incident, and I do want to circle back to that before we wrap up here today, Tony. But at the same time, I have to focus in on your Bertuzzi comment there, because I get the feeling that in the entire lifespan of the Minnesota Wild as a franchise, Todd Bertuzzi might be like the biggest villain in the history of that team.
Ooh, he is up there because, you know, a lot of the people who own the Wild historically are generally seen as like really good people. Joe Sakic, Jerome Iginla, like nobody has anything bad to say about Sakic or Iginla, except that he scored too much on Minnesota. I'm trying to think there was a lot of Matt Cook hate even when Matt Cook was on the team, that might be up there, but. I think the biggest villain in Minnesota Wild history, now that I think about it, is Norm Green for moving the North Stars and foisting the Wild on Minnesota in the first place indirectly. But yeah, Bertuzzi as a player, I think when that was hot, right, that he was probably public enemy number one in Minnesota.
And the funny thing about that is when I've gone back and revisited that that chapter, which I don't like to do because, as we mentioned earlier, the Canucks did get defeated. And that Game 7 in particular is probably one of the more notable heartbreaks in Canucks history, which, Tony, I tell you, for a franchise that's lost Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final twice, that is a real statement to be like, losing Game 7 of Round 2 against Minnesota is a very notable historic heartbreak for this franchise. But as I go back and revisit that and do a little digging to try and kind of jog my own memory, given that it's been 17 years, the funniest part of that whole episode is that that's not a comment that Bertuzzi made in like post-game press conferences or to the media at all.
No.
He was literally walking outside the rink, I think to like the team bus after a game, and just saw fans crowded around like the ticket booth and yelled directly at fans. Like the fact that this was even reported at all, that this made it back to the media, I don't know if there were reporters who witnessed it or if it was fans bringing it, but regardless, a very fascinating incident, I think, in the history of both clubs.
It's true wrestling villain stuff. It really owns. It's a great thing. It's a great story.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, he looks back on that perhaps and possibly regrets giving them bulletin board material. But speaking of bulletin board material, Tony, you got some this week perhaps from Antoine Roussel. Antoine Roussel guested on the program on Sportsnet 650. I was working on the show that day as well. Brought him onto the show, I did. And he talked about the fact that he just thinks Vancouver is better at every key position. I don't know that his logic is entirely sound, especially when he's including guys like Jay Beagle in ways that the Canucks are superior, but that quote, seemingly just on Twitter anyways, from my impression, made a big splash with Minnesota fans. How much talk has there been around Antoine Roussel and his comments in your neck of the woods these days, this week?
I think it was mostly like derision, like, oh, like, are you like, there are people who are like, how can you say that Chris Tanev is better defensively than Jonas Brodin? But like, I think it's been met largely with the appropriate amount of derision. I think I tweeted out like, we have the best draft bust in Jake Virtanen. We have the best 6'7" pylon in Tyler Myers. We have the best $6 million black hole in Louis Erickson.
I mean, not wrong on all counts there.
I mean, you sometimes you have to tip your cap to your opponent, and they do. Like, yeah. I can't say otherwise.
Well, Wes Walls, I feel like, was the guy who brought that to the fore by quote tweeting it just with the eyes emoji. And I don't know, like, if that's going to fire up Minnesota as a team necessarily and give the actual players bulletin board material or extra motivation. It just seems sort of like a fun fan thing. I did see a lot of people getting mad about it, though, and definitely expecting that the Wild are going to roll over the Canucks in this series, which is typical of fans to always be the most optimistic about what their team is going to do at any time. But what is the expectation around Minnesota this season? Because, Tony, I have to tell you, this is not a team that I know very well this season. This is a club where, you know, when the Paul Fenton reporting was coming out via The Athletic last summer, which was hilarious. I just sort of, even though Fenton wasn't even there anymore and had been replaced, it just felt like this is a team that's going to take years to recover from the damage that this moron inflicted on them, essentially. And yet, I mean, it's hard to say you guys made the playoffs this year because the whole situation with play-ins and all the teams that qualify is a little bit wacky and out of the ordinary. But, like, what is the expectation in Minnesota? Is this kind of just a found money season where you're happy to be here? Or do fans actually think that this is a team that can go on a bit of a run at the moment?
I don't know if anyone thinks that, you know, they can, like, go on a run. I don't think it's impossible for them to you know, maybe like luck into to a conference final, depending on their matchup in like rounds one and two. But I think that I don't think that anyone's really expecting much more than this team to advance to the first round of the playoffs. And like, I guess there's kind of a divide. There's like people who are like really optimistic about this team with Kevin Fiala's breakout in the second half. I mean, It's like if all of a sudden, like, one of your, like, you know, like, decent top six wingers from, like, 3 years back turned into Elias Pettersson for a month or two. Like, it was that kind of revelation. And then you haven't even, like, you know, Minnesota didn't have, like, their own version of, like, or they didn't have, like, their Sedins or anybody who was, like, high-end before that. So, like, imagine going 10 years without seeing someone like that, and then all of a sudden, like, Kevin Fiala turns into that kind of player for 2 months. Like, I think that's given people a lot of optimism that they wouldn't have otherwise. I think there are also a lot of people who are like, like, they're going to, you know, they're gonna beat Vancouver and then lose out on a chance at Alexis Lafreniere. Like, there are a lot of, like, tank for Lafreniere people, too, here, who are maybe, like, resigned to the fact that Minnesota could win in the first round, in this opening round. So I think it's either optimism or pessimism.
Pure defeatism.
Pessimism about, like, even a small victory that they might see as inevitable.
Well, that's funny that this would be, you know, two fan bases that perhaps view each other as rivals, because it sounds like we have a lot in common, actually, Tony, because there's a divide here, or at least a belief in quote-unquote Canuck luck, that the most Canuck thing that could possibly happen is that the team beats the Wild in the qualifying round, goes into the playoffs, maybe wins a round, maybe gets knocked out in the first, depending on who they draw, and that the Wild, especially with Judd Brackett now helming your amateur department, are just going to immediately win that lottery and walk away with Alexi Lafreniere, because that seems like the most Canuck thing that could possibly happen. Been just given the way we have been cursed over the years. And it is funny, actually, to hear you say that Minnesota fans have similar just kind of Chicken Little expectations of whatever can possibly go wrong will, because that's tended to be the way it has gone.
I did want to ask about Brackett, like, what did you think about that, and like, is how much do you get the sense that Vancouver's losing from Judd Brackett, and by extension, how much the Wild's gaining? Because I'm excited to see this team make gains in the scouting department.
Huge, man. Absolutely huge. I was very disappointed to see the way this played out from the Canucks' perspective, especially given that it seems entirely politically motivated, that there are other people in the organization who perhaps hold more powerful positions than John did, that wanted to kind of push him out of the way and take over the responsibilities of the things that he was doing, which is very disappointing when those people are John Weisbrod, and you look at the record that Weisbrod had with Calgary when he was running the drafting there and did not produce a single NHL player, basically, in most of the top picks that they reached on. And even, you know, Weisbrod was responsible for the Iginla trade as well, which brought back zero NHL players for the Flames, too. So,
cool.
scouting is really not a forte of this guy's, even though he really wants to do it. And in bracket, you have basically the best scout in the history of the franchise. The Canucks have historically been terrible at drafting for 50 years now, and this guy came in and was able to unearth some quality players later in the first round. Brock Besser, definitely a Judd Brackett player that he scouted and would have made the case to Jim to draft back when Brock was drafted. And beyond that, being able to find players in rounds 3, 4, 5, which, you know, shouldn't be out of the ordinary, Tony. Every single NHL player or NHL team should be, just as a law of averages over 4 or 5 years, you know, unearthing some players in the later rounds that wound up being NHL guys. For the Canucks, it just never seemed to happen. So, you know, we had a good stretch of competent drafts that, you know, even if the players didn't turn out, you couldn't impugn the process, if that makes sense. Because you've seen historically Vancouver over the last 50 years tend to just waste picks on the type of players that you can get for free on waivers in this league every single week. Guys who, at their high-end top ceiling potential, are going to be 13th forwards or 7th defensemen or fighters even. Like, there's no sense in drafting those guys. And when Brackett was running the draft here, the team went for skill in pretty much every single round, which, you know, fans loved and felt very encouraged by. He just had tremendous success here in terms of the players that they were able to unearth, not just the guys that they picked high in the first round, but later on as well. I'm really going to miss him, and I do think that Wild fans should be very excited about the future of the amateur side having acquired him. You've already picked up a big victory over the Canucks before the series even starts.
I like the idea that the best scout in the NHL is just like the one guy who's like, oh, you know what? Maybe the punching thing doesn't matter that much.
Yeah, pretty much. And there's unfortunately all too few scouts who think that way, unfortunately. But let's get back to Minnesota as a team this year. It was funny listening to you describe Kevin Fiala, because he is probably the best player that Wild fans have seen since Marian Gaborik departed, because, like, even Zach Parise, who was obviously highly touted when you guys signed him, has not really had the same success in Minnesota that he did in New Jersey prior to signing that enormous contract.
A lot of that's injury related, though. Like, when you look at his per game goal averages, he usually hovers around like 30 goals on an 82 game pace. So I think that injuries have taken a lot away from him. But like, I can also understand, like, you know, I think when Parise was in New Jersey, right, he was regularly putting up like 80-point, 90-point seasons. And he's not doing that now, which, you know, to be expected. But I will say that I think Parise is a very, 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 very good player. I do not think that he, you know, I think that people hope that he would touch that greatness that Marian Gaborik was able to live in. And he probably fell short of that. I would say that Kevin Fiala is probably the closest person to get to that. But at the same time, like, we're only like 2 months into it, and you definitely have to see more. But, you know, when you see anything like that from a 23-year-old player, you're just like, wow, this is going to be a real good decade for us.
Yeah, and one Paul Fenton move that maybe did not go terribly in the end after all, right?
I'm trying to think of the other one. And you know what, though? You know what, though? I will say, like, I would much rather have, like, it's better to burn out than fade away, right? I would much rather have epically bad GM like Paul Fenton just like really trash the place in a year than have, and I mean this hoping that you feel the same way and that I'm not causing any offense, but Jim Benning to just like hang out for 6 years.
Oh yeah, with no end in sight. Like, it really feels like this guy's going to be in charge of the team for more than a decade by the time it's all said and done, and the team will probably have accomplished absolutely nothing of note during that time.
Which blows my mind. He is on tape. He is on tape in the Boston Bruins front office as they're making the Tyler Seguin trade, being like, yeah, he's not a Boston guy.
Yeah.
That should be a career ender.
It's not great, man. I'm not a Jim Benning fan by any stretch of the imagination. And if you know, getting swept by the Wild here would create a situation where the team had no choice but perhaps to clean house a little bit, I can't say I would entirely complain about that. Especially if you're going to get a shot at Alexi Lafreniere out of it as well. Like, how can you not kind of want that on some level? But we'll get back to that in just a second. But first, I want to tell you about auto parts. Yes, we know, folks, that going to a garage, going to have your car looked at, can be an exhausting experience. Of course, there are so many makes and models these days that anywhere you go, probably not going to have the specific part that your car requires anyways. And you know how those guys are when you're in there. They don't have the part that you need, but they're going to try and sell you something that you don't. That is not the case, however, for the good folks at rockauto.com. Yes, rockauto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for the last 20 years. If you go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers, you are always going to find what you need. They have everything from engine control modules to brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The rockauto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices that you prefer. And best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much to get the same parts when you can go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck? Right, Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us box so you know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com. Now, where were we? Right. It's funny to hear you say that, like, Fiala was such a revelation and that, you know, you haven't seen something like that again or in a very long time, in more than a decade. And yes, that's at a very high level. But I look at the roster that the Wild are bringing into this play-in series, and up front anyways, on the back end as well, you know, obviously the team might be a bit lacking in net, but this is a club with depth, I think, is certainly at the forward position. You know, I'm not sure, because maybe I'm looking at this the wrong way, because as I said, this is not a club I'm all too familiar with, and it drives me insane when I hear NHL analysts at the national level talk about the Canucks as having tremendous depth, because, well, you look at their fourth line, and Brandon Sutter is a fourth line winger. Brandon Sutter, a fourth line winger? Can you believe that? The team must have outstanding depth. And it's like, no, actually, Brandon Sutter sucks, and that's why he's playing there. The team would be even better if he just didn't exist at all. But I'm looking at this Wild forward group, and Mikko Koivu is your fourth line center, which seems great, but then a part of me is like, wait a second, what's my most notable Mikko Koivu memory? And it's the Matthias Olin slash that you brought up earlier, which I'm pretty sure is from 12, if not 13 years ago. So, you know, is this just a guy that I have built up in my mind as, you know, memories of a decade ago? Is Mikko Koivu still a guy who's got some juice, and this team is as deep up front as it looks as it is on paper?
I think it is as deep as it looks on paper to you, because, like, I'm looking up and down the lineup, and I think Luke Cunningham was the only guy who was negative war, according to Evolving Hockey's metrics, and you don't really see teams that have, like, one player who, like, you could easily, like, you know, switch someone else off the roster and and, you know, see like an improvement from, right? Usually there are a couple of guys, maybe for like weaker teams, like a handful, right? Where it's like, oh, like this is a guy in a key spot and he's not very good. And Minnesota doesn't really have that. They, other than Fiala, right? They don't have somebody who can take over a game, right? So it'll be interesting to see them match up against a team like Vancouver, who has, you know, a handful of those guys, and at least to my view, right? Not much else. I'd be interested in hearing what you had to say after I was done. But you know, that blue line has a lot of depth, and their forwards also, like Ryan Donato. I keep thinking about Ryan Donato, who was, I think he was top 10 in goals per hour at 5-on-5 this year, and he can't get 11 minutes a game in this lineup. Like it is that level of depth. Maybe a little bit weaker at some key positions like center. It's not great past Eric Staal. Like Joel Eriksson Ek's a really good defensive center. He'll probably be playing second line minutes, and then Alex Galchenyuk is maybe a mixed bag in his NHL career so far.
Oh, is he still there? I thought he got traded somehow during the pandemic again.
No. Nope, still here. He's in Edmonton now, but so is everyone else. So like maybe at center you look at that, and of course in net, right? In net is the real Achilles heel of the Wild, but you can see the bones of a really good team in Minnesota.
Yeah, I feel like the Wild are kind of like maybe the Carolina of the Western Conference, in that like even their good players get slept on a little bit because no one is really going out of their way to watch Minnesota games unless their team is playing against them on a given night. Because, like, you know, like Matt Dumba is an incredible defenseman, and I don't know that we necessarily give him the credit that he deserves. You know, and there's probably a couple of defensemen on the Minnesota back end that don't get the credit at the national level, the attention that they might deserve.
I think it's Evolving Wild who once said, you don't hate the Wild because they're boring. You hate the Wild because they make your favorite players boring. and I think that there's a lot of truth in that. Like, that blue line is really underrated. I think Jared Spurgeon's finally getting some of the attention that he deserves. But, like, usually, you know, you look at Ryan Suter and he gets a lot of attention, deservedly so. He's been great for them for 8 years now. But like Jared Spurgeon does everything and is so good at it. Jonas Brodin is probably the best defensive defenseman in the game. Assuming that Nick Hjalmarsson has like fallen off. Like obviously I think he was the king when he was good. Matt Dumba has just an amazing shot from the point. For a lot of this year, he was dealing with the, I guess, after effects of a pectoral muscle tear that kept him out for like 50 games last season. And like I think that getting his shot back or getting confidence enough to let it rip is something that gave him like a little bit of trouble this year. But assuming he's healthy, that's a really scary weapon as well. And then Carson Soucy and Brad Hunt on third pair. They're not bad, I don't think. Carson Soucy can skate. He's 6'5". He's shown more hands this year than he ever has. Brad Hunt is, you know,
a good Vancouver kid.
Yeah, is he? I didn't know that.
From, I believe, Pitt Meadows, somewhere out in the valley, something like that.
All right.
From the Vancouver area.
And he's just... you know, a fine, solid defenseman. Like you can have him in your third pair and not lose too much sleep over it. So I think there is a lot of depth there.
It's funny though, to hear you talk about, you know, Vancouver maybe not being able to match the depth up front. I do think this is a very deep Vancouver team, certainly up front and certainly after a long layoff where everyone, save for Josh Levo, is coming back healthy right now, because this is, you know, the one thing that Vancouver fans never get to see ever is like a fully healthy team that is not missing at least some key pieces at some position, especially on the back end. Chris Tanev is almost always injured, and it's actually funny this year, Chris Tanev wound up managing to suffer a terrible injury in the very last game before the stoppage. So he played a full season this year while also suffering a significant injury and is coming back completely refreshed. But I do think this is a Vancouver team with a lot of depth up front. You know, you were joking about Jake Virtanen being the biggest draft bust between both teams, which maybe is not entirely wrong. But Jake Virtanen is still a guy who was basically going to put up 40 points and 20 goals this year. And as you look at this forward group, there are other reasons that contribute as to why he's not in the lineup. It's a lot of personality issues and maybe not taking things seriously enough, maybe not coming into camp in proper condition. He did get chewed out publicly by Bo Horvat on the ice during the scrimmage game. The captain of the Canucks yelling some very strong obscenities at Jake Virtanen during one of the scrimmages during camp here. But Jake Virtanen is still a useful NHL contributor. Whether he's a good player or not is a different argument, but he can be useful. And he is currently this team's 15th forward. If Josh Levo were healthy, 16th forward, which is pretty astonishing for a guy who nearly scored 20 goals. I don't entirely like Vancouver's fourth line, but they do have three lines up front that can all contribute as far as scoring goes, and a top six that might be one of the best in the history of the franchise, honestly. I'm very excited to see what this group can do. It's tough to get excited, though, because it's a five-game series. You could be swept in three if things go really sideways for you, and who knows how long it's going to take for these teams to kind of click into gear, because I don't know how the Wild fared in their lone tune-up action, Tony, but Vancouver certainly left something to be desired in their exhibition contest against Winnipeg, and you don't have a lot of time to really figure this stuff out at the moment.
Minnesota did great. They went 1-for-8 on their power play. We loved it. I was excited to talk to you because I you know, obviously I know JT Miller, I know Besser, I know Pettersson, I know Toffoli, you know, those guys who are your top guys, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know much else about Vancouver. Obviously they're not in the division, right? So you play 2-3 times a season and you don't get to see them that much. Who am I sleeping on?
I think Tanner Pearson gets slept on by even people in this market. This is a guy who was on pace to put up more than 60 points this season, which if you look at last year's scoring race, puts him in the top 90 players in the league, which, you know, makes him a first line scorer, essentially. A fringe first liner, but certainly if you're going to be in the top 90 in league scoring, you are a first-line scorer, and this is a guy who's like their number six forward, but plays very, very well with Bo Horvat in particular. So that's a guy who gets slept on. I don't know, man. I'm really excited to see what Brock Besser is going to do here because he seems to always be very inspired to play against the Wild for, I think, obvious reasons. He's also, there's a lot of emotion wrapped up in the year that he has had and his father's health situation and so on, etc. And there's a number of cases like that, I guess, up and down the Vancouver lineup. A number of guys who lost their fathers, even just during the pandemic stoppage. Adam Gaudette, Troy Stetcher, Jacob Markstrom lost his father not long before that. Guys have a lot of emotional reasons to want to do very, very well, and they're able to channel those emotions into strong play. That's certainly been the story of Markstrom's season all year long. But I'm kind of excited because Brock has been in a kind of a lightning rod in terms of controversial discussion in the city this year, where people are kind of down on him because he's not necessarily scoring at the same rate that he did in years past. People kind of wondering if his shot has been altered by numerous wrist surgeries over the course of the last couple seasons here. But he's also a guy where if you look at the process, everything that he's doing is fantastic, and he's a much better all-around player right now this season than he was in years previous, and he was still on pace to put up a pretty good point clip, all things considered, so the idea that anyone in this city has been down on the year that he's had is kind of funny, but he does strike me as somebody who is poised to pop off in the playoffs right now, and the fact that he's back with Bo Horvat and has been knocked off of that top line by Tyler Toffoli, I mean, it just gives this team added depth. I'm really excited to see what they do up front. And another guy that you might be sleeping on is Michael Ferland, who is also being slept on by Vancouver fans because we just haven't seen him barely at all this year. He had a very difficult season with illnesses and concussions, and concussions have obviously been a huge thing for him in the past, but he had like a stomach virus in training camp, lost a lot of weight, you know, had to put it back on, was very, very sick in the early going of this season, so he kind of was on the wrong foot from the get-go. But he's coming back healthy. And look, obviously one bad hit in game one could not put him right back on the shelf again. Mm-hmm. But this is a guy who was brought in to be a top six forward when he was signed. You know, was being penciled in as a Elias Pettersson line mate, perhaps. He's playing on the third line right now with Antoine Roussel and Adam Gaudette. And that is a line that has some good peskiness, but also some good offensive punch. The number one knock on Ferland over the course of his entire career is that as a scorer, he's very streaky. His goals and points tend to come in bunches. But if that happened right now, that wouldn't be a knock. That would be the greatest thing he could possibly do. So
I never liked people who are like, oh, you're too streaky. Oh, man, he's just too good sometimes.
Well, it's that it's not consistent enough, I guess, right? Like, you'd want a guy to have offense more spread over the course of the year instead of just being hot for a couple weeks. But no, you're not wrong necessarily. There's a lot of question marks on this Vancouver team, but a lot of reasons to be, I think, optimistic as well.
I think that my listeners would kill me if I didn't make this pitch. So I'm going to make it now. I'm very sorry. But if Vancouver is looking to get Brock Besser off their hands, I do know a team of 18,001 that will gladly take him.
Well, you know, if they do have to make that move, it will be to acquire a high-end defenseman. So if you're willing to part, perhaps, with a Matt Dumbo, we can see what we can do here, perhaps.
I think that there are people who would probably make that move, so maybe that is something to watch over the summer. Ooh.
Yeah, I just hope that Jim Benning is not one of those people, but we'll see. Before we wrap up here, Tony, I need to get a series prediction from you, even though it's entirely useless and we're definitely going to be wrong. How do you feel that this series is going to go?
Man, that's not a lot of confidence. I'm gonna go with Vancouver in four, and I'm doing this. I really struggled with what I was gonna do, because, like, you know, I do think Minnesota has a lot of depth, especially on their blue line, and even up front, and I think that is something that can win a series. But also, I'm just looking at, you know, Elias Pettersson, Brock Besser, JT Miller, those high-end scorers up front, and they can make, you know, not dangerous shot locations very dangerous shots by how skilled they are. And if there's one thing that Minnesota's goalies are bad at, is stopping dangerous shots. And I think that Vancouver is going to overwhelm those goalies.
Well, I'm also going to go with Vancouver, but I'm going to say this goes the full five. For a lot of those scorers that you just talked about being frightened of, this will be their first playoff exposure in the National Hockey League. And I do think they're going to do well, but I also think there might be a little bit of an acclimation period here. So I'm going to say it's going to take five games for Vancouver to really find their feet and come alive and come away with the victory here. But Wild fans, not to worry. You will very much enjoy Alexis Lafreniere. So don't get too upset about being knocked out. It's going to happen. If the Canucks knock them out with Judd Brackett there, it's going to happen for you guys. You're going to win the lottery. But having
you know what?
I will
gladly ride Vancouver cursedness to my happiness. Like, yeah. I'm okay with that.
Having predicted Canucks in five, I'm sure the Wild will now win in four. But, you know, this is the nature of predictions. Tony, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about this series with me, man. I'm sure we will catch up again after it's over, or perhaps even while it's in progress. But if people want to hear more from you and your Minnesota Wild coverage, where can they find that?
They can find me on Twitter at OhHiTony. They can also find my work at zonecoverage.com/wild.
All right, man. Thank you so much for taking the time today, and enjoy the series. I know I am. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, it will. Same to you.
There he is, folks. Tony Abbott of Locked On Wild. And that was a very fun chat, actually, and a very hospitable chat. I was expecting maybe a little bit more animosity. But, of course, we are media members. We are professionals. And we can be friends as well, even if our teams are not. That's the show today. Hope you enjoyed it. I had a good time putting it together for you. If you would be so kind as to head on over to the iTunes store, perhaps throw me a rating or a review if you enjoyed this show, or tell people that the show exists and that you like it and that they might like it too. All that good stuff. I'll be back with a post-game report late Sunday night, early into Monday morning, as we have actual hockey, a real live game. I want to call it a playoff game. It's not exactly that, but very, very close, coming your way before you know it. And I'll be here every step of the way to break down the entire Canucks run, no matter what they happen to do in these coming playoffs. Hope to have you with me along for the ride. In the meantime, I have been and will continue to be Justin Morissette, and you've been locked in on Locked On Canucks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.